One area of mental health care and treatment that has definitely improved in the last several decades is how we treat those who are mentally ill, right? I mean, we came from Spartan beginnings about a half a century ago to the point that we are today.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's worth recognizing our history, even though it might be difficult, because it could help give us some insights to how we can do even better now to meet the needs of people who are struggling with psychological disorders. And, you know, it's important to recognize that for most of human history, you know, the notion of a psychological disorder really wasn't a thing. For the most part, sort of those sorts of strange behaviors, abnormal sort of moods and emotions and behaviors were explained as by the supernatural, right? You know, the idea of, and we hear it in the news now, of witch hunts, it was not too long ago an actual thing, right? Predominantly targeted towards individuals who would really, if you kind of look back historically, displaying signs of mental illness, right? If we look who were labeled witches, who were labeled as sorcerers and possessed, you know, some really cool work where historians are going back and kind of showing that they actually look like mental illnesses we now label as medical conditions.
And what did some of the treatments for those patients entail?
Yeah, and it's not great. You know, if the problem is you're possessed by a spirit, a demon, or a witch, the goal of treatment is to sort of make the body unfit for demonic possession. So these would be things like exorcisms or snake pits to scare away the spirits, and even worse, some of the sort of torture that was often done in the service of sort of treating the supernatural cause. So it was, you know, the Dark Ages were labeled that way for some reasons, and unfortunately that tradition continued until really, you know, several, you know, just a couple hundred years ago, we start seeing a transition. And so one was thinking about psychological problems as sort of medical or biological problems, that there was a problem sort of within the person. Not all those treatments were great as well, though. We had some challenges. So sort of early biological treatments for mental illness mainly involved isolation, right? We think about old asylums that now are, you know, really no longer with us, but, you know, we don't have to go back too many years, 50, 70 years, where we see sort of the ends of that asylum era, where we took people with psychological problems, we removed them from public view, isolated them, you know, in these sort of rural locations, and treatments there were few and far between.
Were there a couple of important research papers written, or did a couple of prominent researchers devote time to studying this? How did this care change?
Well, yeah, you know, I think it's a great question, and it came from multiple fronts, and you know, I think the science really came second. The first real push to change this came from a tradition we call moral therapy. It came from a humanitarian perspective. It wasn't that, you know, I think science followed a more fundamental sense that, you know, we need to treat humans with dignity, right? So if you look at some of early writings of individuals like Dorothy Dix and others, you know, back in the 19th century, you see that they really saw that what they saw was people were warehoused, not treated with dignity, that they didn't have any sense of humanity. And so they advocated for, we need to treat humans like humans. And so there wasn't a scientific agenda. There wasn't even a sort of treatment or that this would help agenda. This was just a fundamental, like, we as society can do better. We can care for our people who are sick, who are suffering. This is not a moral failing. This isn't something wrong with them. We need to, you know, treat them with dignity and respect. And what's interesting is when you started doing that, when you started taking people who were, for lacking a better term, warehoused, were not engaged in any routine, when you started having them dress each day, having them sort of have a sense of meaning and purpose, they also started getting better, right? Because it turns out that those, like, things are really important in our lives. And so there was some really innovative work not too far from here in Illinois at the Anna State Hospital, where they started helping incentivize just developing routines, making your bed, going to groups, sharing, eating lunch with others. And we started doing that, you know, people started getting better. Now, I'm not saying there weren't other research or things that came with it. And yes, we had medications that help. And we've discovered in the past 50 or 70 years, we've discovered a wonderful array of treatments and medications that can help. But the start of it really came from a much simpler idea. That, you know, when we see others struggle, when we see others suffering, we want to approach them with dignity, kindness, respect. And from that, then all these other advancements came.
since treatment has gotten better, just in general, are people less afraid of or threatened by the prospect of being admitted for care? Because with the therapy you were talking about earlier, it would seem like people would run away from people who wanted to admit them for care or treatment.
Sure. And, you know, stigma still is, and fear is one, is still one of the major barriers to helping, right? And so I think we need to do better, right? You know, we have, as a society, we've gotten better talking about mental illness, being better about understanding that people with mental illness are our neighbors, our family, our friends. They're people first, right? And that we can provide an environment that's safe and supportive for them. So I think we still have a ways to go. And some of that is providers, like myself, being better at talking to individuals who are concerned and families that are concerned. And part of it is building better choice into treatment so that, you know, it's not that you come in and that you're locked against your will and you don't know how long you'll stay or what'll happen to you, but that we can empower individuals to make their own decisions that are bright for them and their families regarding treatment. We can give consumers of mental health service options and choices about what is the best fit for them and their values instead of just presuming there's one way. So I think we have lots of wonderful things happening, and we still need to do better. You know, if you look back at mental health and how we're working today versus 200 years ago, sure, we deserve a pat on the back, but really just for a second or two, because we have to think of where we want to be 50 years, 100 years from now, and how we can do better at meeting the needs of everyone. And I think that fundamental piece that we don't want to lose sight of is that first and foremost, we want to help humans, and we want to see people as whole, complete persons, worthy of dignity and respect, and involve, you know, everyone in this process of building, you know, a better and more healthy world.